Well, once again, my name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a member of the Carl Gables group. It's good to be here. And I'm going to try to see whether I can figure this out. I was going to do the 11th step tonight, but I'm going to be leaving town for about a couple of weeks to be up in New York and New Jersey and Virginia and North Carolina and Tennessee and all over the place. But so because of some scheduling thing, I'm going to try to do 11 and 12 tonight, sort of mush them in together. So I'll try to get that thing done for you. And then when I come back, I start the North Miami group, the upper room. And it's a real privilege to have been here, and I do appreciate your courtesy and your kindness in allowing me to do this deal. And I get probably more out of it than anybody else, so I appreciate it. I want to talk a little bit about Step 11. I've got a few things I've picked out in the book. Most of them come from, you know, the 11th step and the 12th step in the book, but, you know, and so I might read a few of those things for you, but, you know, and of course I want to share my own personal experiences. You know, I haven't found necessary to have a drink in a little over 30 years, not a record around here. My sponsor's over here, he's got like 57, and, you know, there's other, yeah, that guy. Sir Thomas Aquinas, St. Thomas Aquinas said, "To one who has faith, no explanation is necessary, but to one without faith, no explanation is possible." That's been my experience. That's been my experience. You know, I'm not saying I don't try, and we shouldn't try to expose ourselves in the sense of exposing our faith and what has happened. That's what this deal is all about, but you know, not only alcoholics, I don't think you have to be alcoholic to be closed-minded. I think a lot of individuals are closed-minded, but to those who have a closed mind, it's impossible to give an explanation living a life of faith, which essentially means necessarily living a life believing in things that you cannot see or prove. Now, of course, to somebody like me who is, I'd like to believe I'm a man of faith, and I live a life of faith. Not that I'm perfect. If you hear me say I'm perfect, that's because that's what you hear me say. That has nothing to do with what I'm actually saying. For those people who strive to live a life of faith, the proof is evident in the life. The proof is evident in the life itself. Because I had occasion to live a life where I believed in nothing. For 31 years, I believed in nothing. I was a skeptic. Well, that's not true. I believed in me, my brain, quantum mechanics. You know, I believed in the intellect. That's what I believed in. And I was miserable. And I wound up miserable. And I wound up drinking myself into a sorry and pitiful state. And sometime about 30 years ago, because of the desperation I found myself in, I found myself in a pitiful situation where I had no choice except to turn to a God I didn't understand and ask for help. And for many years now, I haven't found it necessary to feel sorry for myself, haven't found it necessary to worry, even in the face of serious circumstances. You know, I've had occasion to have incredible experiences, an incredible life, having nothing to do with material things. As a matter of fact, interestingly enough, when I didn't believe in anything, the world and everything in this world meant everything to me. And when I started to have occasion to develop faith, the things of this world didn't become as important to me as they are to a lot of people, I suppose, you know, because I started focusing on other things. And I know the people that live this type of life and understand this type of life, what I'm saying is perfectly plausible and makes a lot of sense, and they don't need any further proof. And people who don't live this kind of life, it's like explaining the color red to a blind man. I understand that. But the good thing is I know I'm not alone. I know I'm not alone. I know I've laid hold of something that the people in this book had. Because I've read this book, and the parts that they where they talk about what I'm talking about now are clear to me. And it's clear when they're talking about those parts. And I know there are other people that feel exactly the way I do about life now and how and my relationship with God and my relationship with other people. And so that's what I want to sort of share with you. I'm going to read a couple things out of the book. You know, it's funny. I have occasion. You know, I do have a heart for men in these groups that have time but are going through. You know, I think what happens, it's been my experience, that you could stay sober for a relatively long period of time just on going through the mechanics, sort of like faking it until you're making it, and just putting all your cards in the not drinking box. You know what I mean? In other words, if you come in here and if the whole deal is about not drinking, and it remains, and the whole deal remains not drinking, as opposed to increasing, maintaining, and growing a spiritual experience, if the whole box, you could probably stay sober, physically sober for a long period of time, and you'll, you know, you could say, I haven't had a drink in 10 years, I haven't had a drink in 15 years. And you get a lot of claps, a lot of applause, and, you know, we value long-time sobriety. But it's been my experience almost all the time that unless you expand that into emotional sobriety, into a life of faith, somewhere along the line, there's cracks in the foundation. Like I was talking about this last week, the house on sand versus the house on a rock. There's cracks in the foundation. And either people drink, or even if they don't drink, they just live a life where there's something, there seems to be something missing. It's not like those miners I talk about where you could see it in their eyes. They'd hit the mother load. You know, there's no excitement. There's no enthusiasm. There's no love. There's no zest for living or joy. There's just hanging in there one day at a time, putting the plug in. There's just that deal. You know, there's just that deal going on. And, you know, it's... And that's not what I wanted. I wanted what these men had that I ran into. You know, if they say, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it. There were men I ran into here and women, but for me mostly men, who had something besides mere physical sobriety. And they had this joy about them. They had this steadiness. You know, they weren't backbiters. They weren't gossipers. They didn't talk badly about other people behind their backs. They weren't really down on anybody. You know, they were just uplifting people, and they were focused on this program, the big book, and they were all believers. They were all strong believers, you know, in God. They didn't have any problem with it. They were unapologetic, you know. Many of them were churchgoers, some of them weren't, but they all believed in God. So let me read you a couple of things from the book, and then I want to talk about some things. First of all, this is on page 68. You know, the interesting thing, it's kind of hard to pick stuff out of this book because in every page, no matter what I read you, I want you to understand, and some of you who are devotees of the big book know this, on every page it says the same thing over and over again. So there's so many things, there's so many parts where they talk about God and developing a relationship with God and what that'll get you. Whether you're talking about experiencing much of heaven and being rocked to the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, and the central part of our lives today, the central fact and nothing less is that We have an absolute certainty that our Creator lives in our heart. I mean, that's out of the big book. It may sound like it's out of the Bible. Well, of course it sounds like it's out of the Bible. That's all they were reading before they read the big book. But that's what they were talking about. That's what they said. They said, and nothing less, that our Creator lives in our hearts. And this is what they say on page 68. I picked out a few things. It says this. It says, and I'm going to start in the middle of the page. Some of us once had great confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem. But it didn't fully solve the fear problem. Anybody ever worry about something? You ever find yourself anxious or worried about anything? You know what's a sad thing? Let me tell you a sad thing that can happen to alcoholics. It can happen to people in church. It can happen to anybody. Where you're worried about stuff. And you're worried about stuff all your life. Maybe it's money. Maybe it's your health. Maybe it's about other people. Maybe it's relationship. And you develop this opinion, and this is the opinion about it, it'll never go away. I mean, this is just the human condition, just to be worried all the time. You know, I used to think that about drinking. You know, you ever think that about drinking? Well, I can't, you ever say to yourself, I can't envision a life without drinking? You ever when somebody come up to you and say, why do you drink so much? Say, why don't you get out of my face? You know, what do you do if you don't drink? You ever say to yourself, I can never stop drinking, I can't stop drinking? Yeah, you held that opinion pretty strongly. You were convinced. You'd break up families, you'd do everything, because you were absolutely sure you could never stop drinking, you could never live a life without drinking. And then 1 week later, what happened? You could never envision drinking again. All of a sudden, you were living a life without drinking. All of a sudden, life without drinking. So what happened there? So now you live your life, and you got 3 years sober, and you got 6 years sober, and you got 8 years sober, and you're thumb-sucking crybabies, or you're biting your nails, or you're always worried, or, man, it happened to you again, another crappy day, and it's just, you're just living your life, and it's just bringing you down. You say, well, it's just never going to get better. This is just the way it is, because it's like drinking, right? You're always going to think this way. You're always going to be this way. Well, I'll tell you what, you're selling God and AA short, and you're selling yourself short. Because these guys wrote about a different thing. These guys didn't write about a life where they were hanging by their fingernails, not drinking, and feeling crummy about it, and being worried all the time. As a matter of fact, they said crazy things. These guys should have, they said, we lose fear of economic insecurity in the people. You worry about people? You know, they didn't. You worry about money? They didn't. They lost fear of it. You say, well, that sounds like sort of crazy, doesn't it? Well, listen, you need to get a little crazy like me. You need to chop into that some of that craziness. You need to find the because I ran into men who were in that situation. I'm not saying it's a perfect deal. You know, I'm not saying, but you know, there is a big difference between worrying about stuff all the time and always caring about stuff and always having stuff weighing you down and maybe having a bad moment once every 4 weeks. There's a big difference in that kind of life. Perhaps there is it says some of us had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse when it made us cocky. I had a guy, so I have a heart for people that have time. Because what happens is, different people at different stages of the game who have not built the solid foundation or have rested on their laurels or have stopped growing or have gotten... Nobody gets away with anything in here. You're not fooling anybody, and you don't fool yourself. You do this stuff, and you get freedom. You get the new freedom, you get the new happiness. You don't do this stuff, you don't get it. You understand? You don't get it. You can live, an alcoholic has the ability to live in pain for years. You know the old saying of the dog on the porch? I've told you this. There's a dog on the porch, the two hillbillies or whatever it is. Every once in a while, the dog lets out a yelp. And one of the hillbillies says to the other one, he says, why is your dog yelping? He says, because where he's sitting, where he's lying underneath there is a nail sticking out of the porch. And every time he breathes, it hurts him. So the other guy says, he says, well, why doesn't he move? He says, well, I guess it doesn't hurt him enough. And the truth of the matter is, for an alcoholic can hang on. What does it say? Hang on to our old ideas, or the result is what? Nil until we let go absolutely. Alcoholics can hang on to a whole bunch of old ideas for a million different reasons. For a million different reasons, they can hang on to old ideas and live a life of pain and put up with it rather than change. But for some of the lucky ones, the fortunate ones, the blessed ones, the pain gets so bad. That's where suffering is a virtue and pain is a value. The pain gets so bad, they have no choice but to do something but ask like a clown like me, who they would never in a million years ask for. You gotta be really hurting to ask me for advice. I mean, what? Somebody comes to me, asks me for advice, I know he's in trouble. I know. It's like I've been giving the gift of discernment. Somebody comes to me and says, can I ask you a question? I say, I immediately know he's in pain. I mean, there's a lot nicer people around here. This and that, you know, you don't want to be asking me anything. And I have a heart for people, but I have a heart for people that have time where the fishes in their sobriety have gotten so bad that it's starting to affect their sobriety, their emotional sobriety, and it's really starting to really hurt them so badly that they need help and they don't know who to turn to. Because it's not that they're drinking, they're not drinking, they're sober. It's just that there's something missing. And there's something missing and they don't know who to go to because they don't see anybody around who they think that can help them. And even if they did, they have this false pride that they don't want to go up to them and say, I need help. Just like you didn't want to say anything about the drinking or stuff like that. But the interesting thing is what I've always found, or often found, is that whenever you find an individual in that situation, somebody just did it the other day with 9 years, and they come up to you, it's always because of a crisis of faith. It's always because they stopped growing in their faith. You know, they somehow sort of stopped. They've pegged all their money on the psychological, rational, emotional AA hook. And the wonderful group therapy that we have in here, they pegged their entire sobriety on the wonderfulness of the group, or the group speak, or the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and 9 years down the road, they're out of nowhere's land. And it just ain't working for them, because they don't have any relationship with a God of their own understanding, or at least a relationship, a mature enough relationship, so that it's actually working. Because you want to know something, when all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said than done. And there's a big difference between saying, I believe in God, and mouthing the words, and actually having a relationship that works in difficult times. But what's amazing is, as soon as these people give up the ghost, as soon as these men give up the ghost and decide they're not going to fight me or whoever it is, they're not going to argue with me at every turn. They are going to go ahead and do. They're going to. If I tell them go to Bible study, you know, you got to hang around men who are 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old that have been doing this for years. You know, increase your relationship with godly men. You know, pick a whole other group of people. Go further with this thing. Move it further down the line. Move the goalposts further down the line. You know, read more books. Read more spiritual books, read the Bible, get into stuff, focus on. As soon as they give up the ghost and they start doing that thing which they said they would never do, all of a sudden they get almost, I'm telling you, immediate results. Because I'm going to tell you something, what I have found with alcoholics is 90% of their consternation is the incredible depression that comes from not thinking it's getting better at all. Losing hope. And as soon as an alcoholic sees, hey, this thing is working, and they start getting better, it's like a rocket taking off. It's like they've laid hold of something that says, they are there. You know, give me more of this thing. But we get stuck. We get stuck for fear and a whole bunch of other things, you know, and most of the time it doesn't even make any sense, but our fears never do. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. If we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. That's the basis we're on, trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God. You know, some people aren't on that basis. Did you know that? They're in AA. I mean, they read these words, but they're not on the basis of trusting and relying on God. They're on the basis of trusting and relying on their employer. They're on the basis of trusting and relying upon their job. They're on the basis of trusting and relying upon the government. They're on the basis of trusting and relying on their sponsor, or trusting and relying on their group. You know what happens when you're on the basis of trusting and relying on something that, like your job? Well, you worry a lot about your job. You know when you're on the basis of trusting and relying upon your employer? I'll tell you, watch out if your employer is not in a good mood. You worry a lot about your employer. Trust and relying about the country. Trust and relying about your pocketbook or your bank account. You know? How much control over do you have over that stuff? Trust and relying upon other people? Oh, that's fun. That's always a fun thing. Trust and relying upon a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a husband and a wife. You know? They'll tell you they're trust and relying upon God, but when you sit down with them, all they want to talk about is my husband, my wife, my boss, my job. That's the only thing they think about, because their whole security, everything about them is on that deal. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely upon Him. Does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. You know, I want to point out, you ever hear anybody say spiritual? I'm spiritual. I went through this life. I'm spiritual, not religious. I'm spiritual. What do you think that means when people say that? You know, what do you? You know, sometimes I hear people say that, and it's almost like here's what I hear them say: I don't need God. I'm spiritual.
Yeah.
You don't understand. I'm a spiritual person. You know. Well, first of all, I know what kind of person you are because you're an alcoholic just like me. You're a selfish, self-centered, spoiled brat. That's what you are. You are what you were before you came in here. That's what you are. I'm a selfish, self-centered, spoiled brat. That's what I am. You know, maybe you've become spiritual. That's what I know what I am. I've done inventories. I know how I can react. I know what happens when you scratch. I know what I am without God. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I'm a spoiled brat. I'm childish. You know, I guess I just haven't attained the level of spiritual, you know. But I want to point out something here. Whenever they talk about spiritual in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, you listen, they always talk about it as it relates to the fact that you have a relationship with God. Spiritual is never talked about in like a quality that you have, that you, like you're a spiritual person, like an alcoholic is spiritual. They never talk about it in terms of it's just a quality you have because you're spiritual. You're just a nice person. It always makes reference to following His will, focusing on His will, wanting to do His will. They always talk about it in conjunction with a person who's focusing on the will of God. The spirituality that any person shows, exhibits, radiates, always is a reflection of your relationship with Him in this book. The way they refer, because they believe that. Because they believe their Creator and their relation with Creator lived in their hearts. And any spirituality, any change they add, that's why they say things like, He is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. It's clear what they're talking about. He lives inside of us. We have a relationship with Him. Here's what it says. Perhaps it says, we never apologize for anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weaknesses. They're talking about, what are they talking about in terms of spirituality? An individual who depends on his Creator. That's a spiritual person. Paradoxically, it is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate. We let Him demonstrate through us. Who's the spiritual one? Am I the spiritual one? Is that what they're saying? We let Him demonstrate through us, using us as the vehicle, what He can do. I'm a monster. I'm a monster. Trust me. I know who I am. But my God is incredible. My God is incredible. I pray a lot that I never show up, that He always shows up to do the meeting. I never want to be involved in doing the meeting, you know? Instead, we let Him demonstrate to us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. The conception of having the quality of being spiritual without having a relationship with God is not in this book. It may be in the program you want. You call it your program. You know, Marcy's program or Joe's program, but it's not in this program. It's not part of this deal. Later on it says, in talking about step 11, in awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God, there He is again. He's there, I'm sorry. To direct our thinking. There He is, through us. Especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. We need to do that because when you're a monster and you're selfish and self-centered, and, you know, you're a child, you know, and that's who you really are, you need a relationship with God so you can ask Him for the power to not be that way. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental facilities with assurance. Under these conditions. For after all, God gave us brains to use. I'm going to talk to him about that when I see him. I think it was a major mistake, but that's besides the point. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when we are when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our days ahead, we may face indecisions. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration. Listen, I'm going to keep on reading this, but I want you to consider this. You remember when I started this off, I said, I'd like to believe I'm a man of faith. I live a life of faith. I'm a faithful man. You know, it sounds a little strange, a little religious, a little something like that. What do you think they're saying? You tell me how God is in... You tell me if you're not doing the 11th step, if you're not doing this program, how God is not intertwined in every single thought of your entire day, according to them. I mean, you try to figure out what I'm reading here, if I'm making this stuff up, or whether it's in line with what they're talking about. You figure out how you do this thing without having a current, constant, continuous relationship, serious, substantial relationship with God. How you do what they're telling you to do here. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought of decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or an occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still and experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, not because we're spiritual now, but because we've just made constant contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. You become to have the mind of God. His mind is reflected. It's no longer your mind. He takes over that deal. He captures those thoughts. We usually conclude a period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need in order to take care of our problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves. I'm going to go on to this part because I really want to get off, do a little bit on step 12. This is on he sold himself short. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and self-pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and for serving them as I can. And you know, you can go on and on, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come past you and countless others. He's going to show you how to create fellowship you crave. He's going to show you how to create the people around you and who to associate with and who to derive strength from and who's going to lift you up. Later on in the book, Envision for You, it even says, we know but a little. Your reliance must always be just on him. He's going to show you how to do these things. He's going to show you more. I mean, it's clear. Later on, when it talks about what we're going to sort of talk about now, and that is working with others, it even talks to the newcomer. It says, burn the idea into the person's not job or no job, wife or no wife, as long as you trust God and clean house. You know, what does it say right here in working with others? Let me see. Let no alcoholic say, hey, how about this? Let no alcoholic say that he cannot recover unless he has his family back, his job back, any of that stuff back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. No, it's really not girls. It has nothing to do with whether you have a husband or a boyfriend. Nothing. Guys, it has nothing to do with whether you have a wife, you know, or a girlfriend. Nothing. It doesn't depend upon your job. It is dependent upon your relationship with God. Period. That's what I mean. I'm not making this stuff. This isn't just Russell feeding pop. Listen, if you don't like this stuff, don't blame me. You got to write New York. You got to say, take this thing off the market. This is a bunch of stuff. We don't like it here in AA. There's a guy reading the big book, you know? What's that all about, you know? And you know, the implications, you know, I understand why we don't harp on this stuff. Because the implications of this stuff, when you get into it, you know, it makes you look like a bunch of monks. Like, really, doesn't it? You think you're like in some sort of cult, like a bunch of monks, you know? Well, monks are happy. They are, you know. You meet a monk, they're pretty happy, you know. They're not like, you guys don't sit up all night worrying about stuff and things like that. They pray a lot. You know, I know they don't wear fancy clothes or Gucci loafers or stuff like that. But maybe we're a royal priesthood. Maybe the people that really make it here and really are happy, you know, in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s and have joined their life, maybe they're not focused on the stuff that you were focused on in your 20s. Maybe there are people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are like this guy that I just read. Maybe they sort of grow up, they mature, the cars aren't that important, you know, the clothes aren't that important, all the things that you value and worry about that you think are important or the most important things in your life, maybe it's not that important to them. Maybe there are people in AA, there might be people in AA that none of the stuff that you value, that you worry about, mean anything to them, isn't important to them at all, that they're unconcerned about it. And they're perfectly happy and perfectly at ease. And there may be people in Alcoholics Anonymous that don't worry about whether or not they're going to be alive tomorrow. You know, they're just worried about, they just concern themselves with helping other people. Maybe the only thing they concern themselves with is doing God's will and trying to be a decent person doing what God wants them to do. There may be people. I've heard that there are people like that in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've been looking for them. You know, I'd like to find some people like that. That'd be pretty cool, sort of hang around them, you know. I mean, you know, hear what they talk about. I wonder what their conversation is about. I wonder what they talk about. I mean, if there were people like that in Alcoholics Anonymous, if there were, you know, selfless people, you know, people that believed in God and focused on God and thought about Him all the time and talked about Him all the time and wanted to do what God wanted them to do and were grateful for being sober, you know, like the Bill Wilson sort of grateful. You know, God has done so much for me, relieving me this terrible disease that I got to keep on talking about it and telling other people. I mean, if there are people that felt about this deal like Bill Wilson felt about, that were always grateful and always thought they were blessed and wanted to help other people, if there were people like that, I mean, if we could find them in AA, there might be one or two people. I wonder what the conversations are like. I wonder what it would be like to hang around them all the time. I wonder what they talk about the things that I talk about, think about the things I think about. I wonder what kind of friends they have or what kind of relationships they have, you know, what kind of relationships with their wives and their kids and their grandkids and with the world. I wonder what they do with their time, where they spend their time. I mean, do they spend it watching a football game or going to football games or, you know, driving sports cars or something like that? I mean, where do they spend it? Where do they hang out? You know, what do they do? What do they think is important, not important? I'd like to, you know, find, you know, but that's just me. I'm kind of goofy. I'm just interested in those guys. Those are the guys I'm interested in. You know, I mean, if you don't want that stuff, you know, you don't have to have that stuff. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's perfectly permissible. Do whatever you want to do. You know, it's your life. You know, this ain't a dress rehearsal. You know, you basically get what you put into it. This is a pretty simple deal. You know, you come to the end of your life and you, I don't think anybody at the end of their life, I mean, I don't know, I'm not at the end of mine yet, but I don't think they think about, you know, gee, I wish I had spent more time in the office. You know, I know people right now. I know people right now. I know one guy was worth $700 million and he's dying of brain cancer. You know, Steve Jobs is worth a lot of money. He's dead now. I mean, I see his picture, but he's dead. You know, I'm not sure people at the end of their lives, you know, when they're dying, we're all going to get there, really worry about how much money they have in the bank or worry about what, you know, we probably worry about now. They probably think about other things. Don't you think so? You know what would be great? I'll tell you what would be great. If whatever people value at the end of their life, before they're going to die, what they think is important, you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to be concerned about that stuff like right now, maybe 20 years before I die. I'd like to have 20 years of that deal. I know that sounds crazy, but I don't want to have a life where I'm just worrying about all the cars and everything like that, and then in the last 2 minutes I'm saying, I think I screwed this thing up, and all of a sudden trying to play catch up. I'd like to have sort of like a life where you know, where most people at the end of their life were be concerned about that stuff maybe for the next 20 years or something. Does that make any sense? I don't know. It makes sense to me. But I can probably, you know, that kind of stuff probably doesn't make sense to a lot of people. That's why many are called, a few are chosen. That's why there's not a lot of whole, you know, that's why they have that whole thing in the Bible where they say, you know, narrow is the road and few find it, broad is the highway to death and destruction, many go that way. You know, and that's why people, you know, don't like to hear about this stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it would mean they'd have to, because if I'm right, if those guys are right, what they say in there, that would mean they might have to change. You know, you remember how you fought, not one, you remember how you fought those guys who came up to you and said, you know, why don't you watch your drinking? Remember how you felt when somebody came up to you and said, you know, you think you're drinking too much? You want to slap them, right? Well, that's how we feel about people who say maybe you ought to be praying to God a little bit more. You know, how much time are you spending with God? What are you doing? What do you actually, well, that's how we feel about those. We want to slap them. Mind your own business, right? You're meddling in an area you shouldn't be meddling in. And the only reason I'm even bringing it up right now, I'm not really meddling, is because they asked me to do the steps. And I'm on step 11, which has to do with a relationship with God and improving your relationship with God. So, you know, this is my deal. I mean, if you can't talk about it when you're talking about step 11, we're in real trouble. If I can't talk about my experience and what they're talking about in the book and read it in step 11, then what are we even doing here? Why are we even pretending? We're not only faking it to make it, you know, we're just faking it all the time. If we can't talk about, I mean, it's not like we're talking, there may be newcomers here, but I got news for you. This is a step 11 meeting. The newcomers are just going to have to deal with it. But you want something? But I'm going to tell you something. It's been my experience. I don't think the newcomers have a problem with it. I think it's the old timers that have a problem with it. I really do. I think the old timers use the newcomers as an excuse not to talk about it. I think the guys that are really worried are the guys that have been around for 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 15 years that aren't doing it. They don't want you talking about it. So they say, what about the newcomer? Because you know why? I see newcomers in meetings like this where I talk about this stuff all the time, and they're picking up white chips, and they're excited. Maybe they're just goofy and they don't even understand what I'm saying, you know what I mean? They just see people laughing and animated. They have no idea what I'm talking about. They just looks like it's a lot of fun. I don't know. But I don't think it's bothering newcomers. I think it's bothering guys that have been around for a while. What do you think of that? They're the ones that get pissed off. You know what I mean? So, you know, I want to talk a little bit about sponsorship. Listen, everybody does this thing, whatever the way they do it. I'm not going to tell anybody how to do it. I've been from the beginning when I walked in, I was told to do service. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say, look at all the service I've done or anything like that. That's not important. The important thing is my sponsor had me. I've just done about everything, whether it's clean up dishes or mopping up the floors or being secretary of the group or general service. Whatever it is, I've done that deal. I'm not going to go, you know, I've gotten incredible results, spiritual results, I think, from following directions and doing service. I'll tell you, it's very hard not to be committed to Alcoholics Anonymous and committed to this deal when you're actually doing service. It's easy to sort of float into a meeting and float out and read the book and do a meeting here and there, but to be 8 years on the phones every Friday night between 8 at night and, you know, 12 at night, I'm sorry, and 8 in the morning on a Friday night, answering phone calls from people that are calling up Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years, that's a whole different deal. You know what I mean? I did that for 8 years. I mean, you know, to get involved in service is a great thing. Of course, the thing I love to do now, I probably do for the most part, is either do these kind of meetings, which I'm blessed to be able to do, you know, and I love doing it, and sponsoring. I get to sponsor people. And what's even better, I have like grand sponsees now and stuff like that. Because when you've been doing this for 30 years, you get grand sponsees and great grand sponsees and all that sort of stuff. And I like sponsoring people. I like trying to help people out and like sponsoring them. And I have my experience. I mean, you could read the book and everything like that. I think sponsoring people and trying to help out people can cover a whole lot of ills and help you grow up a lot. And there's so many people that don't sponsor people. And that's why it's so important to have a sponsor yourself. Because we're alcoholics. And if there's one thing I know about alcoholics is if you're an alcoholic, you're an excuse-aholic. Trust me, if you're not sponsoring somebody right now, if you've got a couple of years and you're not sponsoring 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 people, I know one thing. I know you have a great reason why you're not doing it. I know I don't understand. I know. You don't have to tell me I don't understand. I know I don't understand. No, I know. Nobody asks you. I understand. I know. No, I know. You're not ready. You know, I know that. I know you're not ready, and nobody asks you, and I understand all that, okay? You know, aren't we glad Bill Wilson, when he was sitting there in the Mayflower Hotel, and he was about ready to drink and only had 6 months, you know what I mean? Aren't we glad, instead of going to that bar, he picked up the phone and called 9 preachers, you know, until he finally got one who said, yeah, I got an alcoholic. Aren't we glad, because you'd still be drunk today if it wasn't for that. Aren't we glad he didn't feel the way you did? He actually went out scouting for people, hunting for somebody to sponsor. Aren't we glad he didn't just sit back, you know, in his back chair saying, well, I guess if somebody wants me to sponsor him, they'll just sort of find me back here in the back, on the back row, and sort of come up to me. You know, I'm not going to raise my hand. I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to go up to new people and, you know, listen. Gee, I wonder what would happen if everybody in A found out that if they don't had a sponsee within 24 hours of coming in the room, they were going to be shot. I wonder how many people. I mean, you'd have a lot. You'd have people grabbing people on the street saying, I don't care whether you're alcoholic or not. I'm your sponsor. I'm your sponsor. I'm sponsoring you. You don't, and you got all sorts of people with ideas, you know. He says, well, my sponsor says I'm not ready. What do you mean I'm not? The big book says you don't have to get stepped. It says you just can't give away something you don't got. I've had guys sponsor people, you know, and they got 3 or 4 or 5 months, you know. And they say, what do I do if I say this? I have no idea how to do it. I says, well, you've got a sponsor, right? He says, yeah. Who's your sponsor? He says, you. He says, just tell him I don't know the answer. Let's ask Russell. Can you do that? He says, yeah, I can do that. Well, you're helping. You know, when somebody comes up to you and says, will you sponsor me? Yeah, I know you're stupid. I know you don't know anything, but they don't know that. They're dumber than you are. For some strange reason, trust me, I don't know why, because I agree with you, you know. They think you're cool. They, for some strange reason, they want what you have. They obviously have no idea what you actually got going for yourself, or else they run from you, but they want what you have. So go with the flow. Why does that bother you? Say, yes, of course I'll sponsor you. If they die, they die. It has nothing to do with you. It's not your fault. You're not keeping them sober. You know, you just have to have a different attitude, and it helps you with the codependency thing. It really helps you with the codependency. All alcoholics are codependent to a certain extent. That's why you can't have any relationships with anybody. That's why marriages all end in divorce and so, like, horrible stuff. That's why all our relationships are horrible. Because we're all so codependent on people. We don't know how to have a decent relationship. We either take hostages or control people or beat them up or are angry all the time or anything. That's why, you know, we just don't even know how to deal with people. You know? Listen, I have the greatest wife in the world. She's a monster, but she's wonderful. I love her. I love her. You know, she says all sorts of stuff to me. I just don't hear it most of the time. You know? You know, really, you know, I have my sponsees. That's how they learn how to deal with their wife. They hang around me and they say, did you hear what your wife just said to you? And I said, no, what? You know? Well, I told you a story about the dog. Did I tell you the story? I told you a story about it. Well, for those who didn't hear, it's a true story, but it pretty much shows the deal. I was going to sleep, and as my head hit the pillow, my wife says, and I was about ready to go to sleep, my wife says, I want to get a shih tzu. It's a dog. I said, and I've learned this over a period of many years. I've been married for 30 years, so I know what to say when she says that. I say, I think you should. That's what I say. I say, I think you should, you know? Really, it works. She says, you know, you're the worst husband in the world. I think you're right. I don't know how you live with yourself. Me neither. Cuts down on a whole lot of crap. Let me tell you something. You know what I mean? Listen, forget the trial. I plead guilty and I go right for the penalty phase. It's always like a blouse or something. You know what I mean? It's always something I can afford. And after a while, she says, oh, there's no talking to you. Forget about it. You know? So she says, I want a shih tzu. I think you ought to get one. He says, it cost me $300. I says, fine, no problem. Get yourself a shih tzu. I think it's wonderful. And then as I'm going to sleep again, I hear her say, and you better not let this dog out like you let out all the other dogs of the house, because I don't want this dog killed, because the last dog we had, you let him out and they got run over, and you're always doing this stuff with the dogs. And for a moment, for a nanosecond, I'll tell you, 10 years before it would have happened, I would have had a 3-hour argument over whether or not I was going to kill the imaginary dog that we don't even have. What do you mean? I didn't kill him. Yes, you did. No, I'm not, you know? And this marriage is over, you know? I said, okay. I went to sleep, you know. Now we got the dog. We got the dog. The dog's at the house, you know? That's sponsees, you know? They call you up and they say, I'm going to kill myself. I say, so why are you calling me up? I mean, do you understand that? 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to kill myself. I said, what are you calling me up for? I was sleeping. You could have killed yourself. I could have read about it. You know what I mean? I want a drink. I think you should. Don't feel so responsible. You think I should? You can't tell me that. I said, yeah, I think you should. You know, if I had the brain you had, I'd be drinking too. Good night. Click, you know? They call me up tonight. You know, they're not going to drink because they wouldn't want to give you any pleasure. You know what I mean? They want to call you up and say, I can't believe you did that to me. You almost killed me, you know? You can't make anybody drink. You can't make anybody stay sober. You don't have the power. Where am I going to get the power? Only God has that power. There's only one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. He didn't give me like 10% of the power. Let me tell you something. I've been in AA for 30 years. And for the, you know, and I've been sponsored for 30 years, closely sponsored for 30 years. You know, things have been a little bit different for the last 15 years, but I can promise you this, for the first 15 years, when I was a thumb-sucking crybaby, okay, a day didn't go by where somebody didn't hurt my feelings. I mean, if people aren't hurting your feelings in AA, you need to get another sponsor, you know what I mean? You need to get somebody in your life that's hurting your feelings in a good way. You know what I'm talking about in a good way. I'm not talking about hanging around basement people that are always bringing you down. I'm talking about somebody who's looking you in the eye, who you know they love you, and they really love you, but telling you what the deal is. You know, I don't want to hear that bullshit. I don't want to hear that crap. That's just an excuse. You know? I'll tell you something. I think, I honestly believe this. I think one of the reasons people like whatever steps I'm dishing out or whatever I'm doing is because some. I know I say things sometimes to piss people off. I say things in people's faces and everything like that. I think sometimes they're so refreshed and they like it because at least they're getting it somewhere because not getting it anywhere else in their life in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it's all about patting people on the back and making sure they feel good. And nobody's telling them the down and dirty truth, which is really what we want to hear. What's the real problem? It's like they used to have that old commercial with the shaving cream with the guy, or whatever, the slave deal with the guy with these studies. He says, like that, and he said, thanks, I needed that. You know, man, I'd have these sponsors, and I'd go up there looking for sympathy, and they'd just kick me in the ass. They'd say things to me that hurt my feelings. It hurts so good. And they would turn me around, and I would see what the deal was, because I knew they really loved me, and I felt good, and all of a sudden, I was on a track, a road to destruction, and all of a sudden, my feet were planted on a road where I was really going somewhere, because some guy kicked me in the butt and put me on the right road. You're not helping people, patting them on the back as they're going into the grave. And you know what the real sad news is most people are running away from people that are telling them the truth. They don't want to hear the truth. It's like that, Jack, the truth, you can't handle the truth. You tell people the truth, they say, I'm getting another sponsor. Good, I think you should. You know, I mean, there's nothing that'll help you more with codependency and not taking ownership of other people's crap. And feeling, because, you know, alcoholics, the reason why they have Al-Anon, what a fine organization. My wife's, the queen of Al-Anon. The reason they have Al-Anon is because we are so toxic. We are so toxic. We have a genius. The sickest, craziest alcoholic has a genius for losing everything because of his own devices and making you feel guilty for it. Like somehow you have to fix it. They will get you on the phone. They will tie you up. You won't hear from this guy you sponsor ever unless he really needs you to get him out of a jam and he needs money or he needs some. The learning experience you have on how to deal with people and when to be responsible and how to help them and when not to give and how to do things is just phenomenal. And I'll tell you something, it helps in your personal life with other people too. Not endorsing their crap. You know, that kind of thing. Learning how to separate yourself from people. You know, that kind of thing. It's the greatest thing in the world to be able to sponsor people And you just, I'll tell you something, you just have to, it's something that has to be done. I mean, I am always amazed at people that have 10, 15 years and they're not sponsoring anybody. It's like an amazing thing to me. And I say that knowing that there are people with 10 or 15 years that aren't sponsoring people in a year, and probably the first thought is, this guy ought to mind his own business. Yeah. I mean, think about it, really. Where would we be? What do you think Bill Wilson was doing, or Bob Smith, or all these guys were doing? You know what they were doing? They were running around. You ever read what they say in the book about what we're supposed to be doing? It was supposed to be the Good Samaritan every day. It's not enough to do a kindly act once in a while. You know, innumerable trips to hospitals. They were running around the hospitals. They were running around the places. They were going to detox centers. They were fishing for people. Don't talk to me about promoting. They were looking for people to sponsor. Yeah, that's what they were doing. And you know what happens? Whenever I see somebody, I'm going to end here, whenever I see somebody who's in a crap load of trouble with a lot of time, and I ask them how many people they sponsor, it's always none. It's always none. Gives you a lot of time to think about yourself, right? Or it's one or two. And of course, it's one or two, and they're not calling, which means none. Let me tell you something. You won't have a person calling you every day unless you sponsor six. You wanna have people on the phone with you every day telling you how they're gonna kill themselves, you know what I mean? You better sponsor 10 or 15. I'll tell you what, because they're gonna fall by the wayside. Let me tell you something. You sponsor about 10 or 15 people, something like that, 20 people, you gather up a group around you, there's people you can gather, you start making friends with people and talking to people. And you have them calling up every day, I'm going to kill myself, my job is crap, you'd be surprised how little time you have to think about yourself. You'd be surprised how you won't be depressed anymore. You know, I'll tell you, you won't have to pop a Valium, you won't have to take a drink, you won't have to do anything. You just go through the day, let me tell you something, when every 20 minutes you get a call from somebody who's going to kill themselves, trust me, you don't have any time to think about yourself. You know, you're just, you know something, the only thing you think about yourself is, Lord, I am really doing well. I'm telling you, trust me on this. They're calling you up. I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to drink. I don't know what I'm doing. By the time you get on the phone, you think you're the wellest person in the world. No matter what's going on in your life. You know, you don't want to miss this experience. It's a great deal. So God bless you. Thank you very much.